Yay Networks.
Welcome to the Great Girlfriends Podcast, where we discuss life, love, laughter, and everything in between. I'm your host, Sybil Amuti, and I can't wait for you to hear all of the Great Girlfriend magic on today's show. So without further ado, grab something great to drink, grab your pen and your paper, and get ready for this week's episode. Enjoy!
Happy Wednesday, great girlfriends, and welcome back for another episode of the podcast. I hope that wherever you are, you have been enjoying quality time with your friends and family. So many of us are fresh off of spring break or sending kids off to prom or in graduation phase. I just want to salute every single one of you that's out there closing out the school year, because I certainly am closing out. I have a sixth grader who's graduating and heading to middle school, and I'm super excited about that. And so I just want to celebrate this season, because there's so much that's changing and turning over for all of us. And it's really beautiful. And I'm quite excited, actually. And so today I want to have a conversation with an extremely powerful and insightful and warm woman who's working in the DEI space and is now spearheading conversations that will help revolutionize the way we approach DEI as leaders. I think it's important for us, as any one of us working in the workplace, to recognize that we each have a role in diversity, equity, and inclusion, and it's our responsibility to advocate and ally in so many different ways and forms. And so oftentimes people are left to feel that they are the only person representing DEI. And so we want to disrupt that and kind of introduce some ways that we can each play our part in the DEI space. And so I want to welcome today, and you join me in welcoming, Netta Jenkins to the show.
Thank you so much. Hey, Netta. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. It's my total pleasure. I feel like, you know, in just speaking with you, I'm like, this is a long lost sister. I can feel it. So hey, sister. Hey,
hello,
how are you today?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much again for having me. So happy to be here with you.
It's my pleasure. It's such a pleasure. And so, knowing a little bit about you, I just want to touch on your bio, but I also want to get into who you are as a woman, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, please.
Okay, perfect. So, and this is an awkward space where some people go, oh my gosh, I hate when you read my bio. Like I don't want to be sitting while my bio is being read, but I think it's important that we just color this episode with a bit of who you are so people understand how your voice has become so instrumental. So Netta Jenkins was just named CEO of Aerodye, a new company with a mission to revolutionize the way companies approach diversity, equity, and inclusion. Over the last 2 years, she has worked through a case study and prototype and is certain that there's a better way for organizations to create truly inclusive workplaces. Aerodye's mission is to empower companies of all sizes to make meaningful progress on inclusivity in an engaging and productive way. Netta has been advising corporations and audiences of all kinds for over 15 years on the most effective strategies to address inequitable gaps in the workplace through her company, Holistic Inclusion Consulting. She is also founder of Dipper, a review and ratings platform for professionals of color, and vice president of global inclusion for Uncork, a technology organization. Netta is also a doctoral student, I think now graduate, and mother of three children. So we've got a 10, a 3, and a 2, correct?
That's right.
Netta, where can we find you on a Friday night? Where are you?
Yeah, you know what? That's a good question. You should ask where I need to be.
Where do you need to be?
I should be in someone's lounge, you know,
But you might be watching Frozen or...
Yep. That's how it goes. I am listening to my kids argue or play basketball in the house.
Right.
So, but it's good times with them. It's such a blessing, you know, that I get to have that experience with them, because yeah. I know that there are many women out there that do want to have children and it can be hard. I was one of those people. So sometimes when I want to complain about it, I say, you know what? You are blessed to be in the situation to even, you know, be able to watch and experience your children. But let me tell you, I need a vacation. I need to be in someone's lounge. So.
I know. I can only imagine a 10-3-2, like your mind is split in three different ways. Right. But, you know, but part of the beauty of what I'm recognized by who you are is your ability to, you know, navigate through these different facets of life. I also noted that you are a doctoral graduate, correct?
Well, so I'm still a student.
Still a student. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So all of this is happening at the same time, all while pioneering, powerful, and in necessary conversations around DEI. And yes. So what led you into that space?
Ooh, you have some good questions today.
I'm curious, girl.
I would say the great girlfriends, right? So both of my parents are from Liberia. They came to this country in the 80s, and I'm not sure why, but they moved to a very small town in Rhode Island, being the smallest state in America. And we experience a tremendous amount of racism. And there's one pivotal moment that I always share with everyone. It was when I was 7 years old, a white woman had spit in my mother's face and said, "Blacks don't belong in my neighborhood." Mm-hmm. And I remember as a child standing next to my mother and feeling all of her, I literally felt all of her energy. Mm-hmm. She was thinking, right, should I react? And we all know what react means, right? Should I turn around? Like, what do I do within this moment? And in that moment, she held my hand and we turned around and we walked mm-hmm. back in the house. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, my mom and I did not unpack that situation at that moment, but I went back in my room and I vowed that day to never be silent because I was silent. Mm-hmm. And it was really that moment that propelled this work. You know, I wasn't calling it diversity, equity, and inclusion when I was younger, mm-hmm. but it was always something that I did. And even within school, and that's what led me to then run for president of the freshman class in a predominantly white school. Mm-hmm. I ended up winning. And I remember my student council teacher saying to me, "Well, Netta, your big job here is to fold flowers for the freshman float." And I looked at him and I said, "Oh no, I'm not here to fold flowers for the freshman float. Like, yeah, the presidents can do that. I'm here to create change." And he laughed so hard. And then mm-hmm. I laughed out after him. I was like, "Wait, do I think I'm Martin Luther King? Who do I think I am?" Right.
Yes.
But that's what I started to do. I started to challenge the curriculum, challenge the teachers, joined honors courses. I joined an Afro-Asian course. And I remember the teacher saying something that just did not make sense. And I paused. Mm-hmm. I said, "Hold on. You know that's wrong. Uh-huh. You're providing one narrative to your students." And he was just like, "Oh gosh."
Like, I'm one of those students.
It was tough. But I was not afraid to respectfully challenge. And having African parents, you know, you kind of have like three occupations you can select from: doctor, lawyer, engineer.
Yes.
So for a very long time, I thought I was going to be an attorney. I was like, I'm in mock trial. I'm killing it, right? Like, we're going to semi-final. That's it. And my father just knew I was like Johnny Cochran. He was like, "Listen, you got it going on."
Yeah.
But that's not the path that I chose. And I chose to really be an activist, and it morphed into the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so interesting because, the word activist is empowering for some people and triggering for others, right? They're like, "Oh God, here comes activists." And then some people are like, "Yes, activists, I understand. It's you using your voice and your power for good to trigger, you know, to call people to action, to transform and create change."
Yeah.
And other people feel like you're coming to threaten or disturb a system that doesn't need to be fixed, right? So I'm pretty sure, depending on the day of the week, you're either getting warm reception or you're getting the coldest shoulder with the work that you do.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm so used to it now, mm-hmm. you know, but at the end of the day, you know, oftentimes when I talk about this work, I said, DEI is about removing barriers that exist so that all people can have an equitable chance to advance.
Right.
And it's that simple. Like, why wouldn't you want for someone else to advance? How does that hurt you? Right. And it's about, and my background is in communications and behavioral psychology. So a lot of what I do is I bring the psychological aspect in it. You have an issue with yourself.
Right. If that threatens you.
If that's threatening to you and you don't want others to advance, then now you need a psychologist. And let's talk about that. Right. So
I know, you know, I've had, again, lots of conversations about DEI, and I have friends that work in that space. And, you know, there was a lot of rapid response in 2020 with companies really putting people in position to revolutionize DEI or even advocate as DEI representatives. Yet so many of my friends have said, "Geez, I feel like I'm a figurehead," or I feel like I'm in an isolated unit of a larger company, or I don't have the funding or the support or the resources that I need to actually move the needle on the work that I'm doing. Is that something that you are familiar with? Have you heard that narrative as well?
Oh, absolutely. I've watched it, you know, even as a consultant, there's a lot of folks that I've coached, a lot of DEI leaders that I've coached, and they went through that experience. They said, hey, Netta, I'm the only person here, right, that is really driving these efforts forward. I have no funding. I have no one supporting. I have no executive buy-in. And so I asked them one simple question. Well, then why are you still there? And that's the hard, it's been very hard for folks to answer that. It's very reflective, right? Like, why am I still here then? Oftentimes when I talk to leaders, and this is something that I have in my book titled The Inclusive Organization, when I talk to leaders, they say, you know, if you're a CFO, have you ever heard a CFO say, hey, we have a finance role. Whoever's interested, come on and join this role. Hell no. We never hear that. And we never will hear that, right? However, you see the inequities that exist within DEI. It's, well, this person's interested. This person was a part of an ERG. So let's bring them on in to do the work. We don't have to give them funding. We don't have to give them support. They don't need any buy-in. You just put all the work on yourself and you execute. And listen, now if something goes wrong, I'm looking at you and I'm pointing the finger, and everyone else will. And when you look at that style, it dates right back to slavery.
Right.
You know, it dates right back to the disturbing systemic racist system that we have all been a part of. And so we as a people, no matter what background we're from, we have to pause and say, okay, well, how can I then dismantle this in my own way? Mm-hmm. How can I begin to speak up? How can I begin to get on these committees where I'm looking at these policies as an HR leader? How do I then advocate for people, right? So it's really about all people then saying, we need to step up and change the system so we can all excel.
So let's talk about the how, because, you know, we've got a lot of great girlfriends that are listening that are leaders in their respective corporations, and also women who are developing new enterprises, right? And so if you're at the onslaught of something fresh and new and innovative, you get to be inclusive in the way that you built the foundation of your company. So it's so valuable for us to lay out from your perspective. And then, you know, if you're not internal to an organization, maybe you're external, maybe you're a consultant, or maybe you, you know, are self-employed or whatever be the case, but how can we as listeners and leaders learn to activate ourselves internally and utilize our voices to ensure that we are doing the work alongside leaders inside of the workplace?
Yeah, I love that. I think, you know, the first thing is really, for me, it was about building a true trusting relationship with senior leaders. And I think it's very, you know, oftentimes as DEI leaders, we step into organizations and we want to take action. We do a little bit of the relationship building, but then we get right into the strategy. A large component of it is building that trusting relationship with the senior leaders so that they provide you with the funding, provide you with the support, so that they understand that you are a credible source within the organization. They can lean on you, but they have to support you. Like, that's just a non-negotiable. And so it's, I think about it like a relationship, right? You start dating whoever your partner is, or you start dating this person. You want to lay out, okay, here's my expectations. Here's what I'm looking for. Can you provide this or not? I think oftentimes we have to start doing that even within the interview phase.
Very good.
We get so excited about going in and tackling the opportunity, but we forget also about our mental health. So I, you know, immediately started to develop a relationship, and that's what I highly recommend DEI leaders to do. Take a step back, really dive into those one-on-ones, ask some of those tough questions, understand, why do these leaders even want to invest in DEI? What do they know about DEI? How much support are they willing to give? What are the other budgets getting? What are the other budgets looking like? The marketing budget, the engineering budget. Now let's compare that to the DEI budget. How many members are on your team? how do we then compare that, right? So you get to pull that data and have those conversations and say, well, you see the inequities here, right? Yeah. We're expecting this department to have, or this leader has this many direct reports, but I only have one. And I'm supposed to create transformational change within the organization. Mm-hmm. It's not matching. It's not leveling up. So I would definitely recommend starting there.
That's really good because, you know, I think we tiptoe around some of those essential questions. And I think, like I'm hearing you say, it's okay to ask about the numbers. It's okay to do a little bit of an assessment and analysis to go, where's the funding being allocated, right? And how am I expected to overturn something? So, you know, or integrate a new way of thinking and a new way of moving or utilizing people resources without having tools in place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you are in a space where I would say you have not found your voice within your organization.
Yeah.
You know, you're more responsive to the voices of other leaders. Maybe you are an entry-level employee, or maybe you know, a mid to senior level, but you still haven't found your space or found your voice. How can we give the mic? What are some of the things we should say, or how are the ways that people can approach conversation to open the door to like larger, I guess, conversations around it?
Yeah. So I go back, it starts off with the relationship phase, right? So even if you're at an associate level, you want to then build that relationship with your manager. You want to understand what's important to them, and then you can share what's important to you. Once you build that relationship with them, they're going to want to support you. Oftentimes, I kind of align it to performance review, right? Yeah. The performance review period comes around, and you have your manager providing you with feedback. And if you don't have a trusting relationship with them, you're already kind of like, wait, hold on. What is this person's intent?
Right.
Is this feedback truly for me?
Yeah.
Or is it biased? Mm-hmm. So you have to start there and lay out those things. I also say building a community of other people within your organization. So whether you're a part of the employee resource group at your company, or, hey, you're just connecting with folks cross-functionally or on your team, create that community, a small group of people that you can lean on. So, you know, when you're in a meeting, and maybe if someone is talking over you or you don't have that voice, you have other people that are willing to amplify your voice and say, you know what? Actually, Sheila brought this idea to the table just yesterday. Mm-hmm. Sheila, can you elaborate on that? Mm-hmm. That gives that individual so much more confidence. And I can provide a direct example of that. I was working for an organization. This was a couple of years back, and was working very closely with the CEO. And so he would always, he was a very, you know, I would say a very huge sponsor and advocate of my career, but he would invite me to the meetings with other executives of the parent company. And I remember one specific meeting, everyone was talking over me. Mm-hmm. The executives did not want to listen. I was the only Black woman in the room at that. He identified the privilege and power that he held within that situation. And he paused the meeting and he said, wait, hold on. I need you all to understand the person that we have in this room right now. She knows more than all of us on this very topic, and we need to give her the undivided attention. Wow. When I tell you, I had chills. I'm like, who is he talking about?
Yeah. Right? And you have a little muscle. You're like, that's right.
I'm
that girl.
Right. I was like, and here she is. Let me tell you, girlfriend, went off on that meeting and I saw how quickly my career propelled as well. Because those same leaders in the room saw that he was willing to back me. So now we're all like children. Like the human behavior is very interesting. We follow each other, right? Mm-hmm. So now they're looking at him and they're like, wait, hold on. He's backing her because he respects her.
Yeah.
He wants to respect her.
Yep.
And my career just really, really propelled.
I think it's so important for, that is such a relevant and, you know, essential example, because many of us have been in that space where we have been overtalked and disrupted and interrupted and have been annoyed by not getting the respect that we need in those spaces. But it's so important that we understand that we can also offer that to other people too. As much as we want to receive it, we can also offer it from whatever position we're in to be able to bring voice to other people. And I think creating that environment where that is cultivated, where we are respectful of other voices and we are encouraging of other voices, mm-hmm. can also help to contribute in a small, slight way towards, you know, disrupting some of the challenges that we even see for women in the workplace.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, okay. My last question for you really sits around the future of DEI and how you see it. As someone who is the CEO of Aerodie and as someone who is working in this industry tirelessly, where do you see DEI going? I will tell you, as an African-American woman, most people that I know perceive DEI to really first reflect minority representation in the workplace as it pertains to being Black and brown. Mm-hmm. And that is so, you know, DEI is far more expansive, right? And it includes so many more categories. So, and as we start to, gender representation starts to change and evolve in our country, how do you see this category of inclusion evolving over time?
Yeah. So one of the reasons why I'm so in love with what I do and Aerodie and the platform is because we're taking it, it's super futuristic. Aerodie is a gamified tool that democratizes the DEI efforts of every single employee within an organization. Mm. For a very long time, and we still see it now, DEI efforts and all the work is always on that DEI leader or their small team, yeah. or maybe even the HR team, right? If they're the ones that are leading it, but it doesn't trickle on down. And then people get upset and say, well, why? We only have one person working on it. The entire employee population is not applying it as a lens to right. their work. Yeah. And so with this tool, when I think about the future, I think about Aerodie and I think about its tool because now it's giving people the ability to see the results of their efforts. Mm-hmm. So the psychological aspect of it would be, I take you to a store. You try on a new shirt. You've never been to that store and you try on that shirt and you say, Netta, oh my goodness, girl, look at me, right? You mm-hmm. love it. It looks so good on you.
Right.
What are you going to do? You saw the results. You're going to go back. Guess what? Yeah. You're going to go back without me.
Yeah.
You're going to go back without me. And that's what we need people to do. Oh, I need a hand to hold you. You are so empowered, inspired by the efforts and your impact and your results that you are willing to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. what this tool fosters. Mm-hmm. And really that's next level. When I think about DEI, it has to be every single person so that people break that narrative of, oh, well, it's only just one specific group. No. Like we were talking about in the beginning, DEI is about how do we ensure that all people advance equitably? Mm-hmm. There are people that are not advancing equitably.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. There are inequities.
So that's what I think about when I think about the future.
And it's so interesting too, Netta, because, you know, I have a 14-year-old and an 11-year-old, and they are much more inclusive and integrated thinkers than I was ever at their age. And I think the way that they are growing up, the lessons that they're receiving and the way that society is changing so rapidly, I think we are going to have such a strong generation of leaders who have it in their DNA, who just by default think and move in a more inclusive way because of the way the world is shifting. I mean, it's happening. So you can see it with your children. Mm-hmm. Your 2-year-old and your 10-year-old are in two different spaces. But the way your 2-year-old will think in relationship to the world when your 2-year-old becomes 10.
Yeah.
Because of the changes that are happening right in front of us. And so, you know, most of us are retrofitting this, right? We're like, I gotta go back and unwire, detangle, and adjust some of the ways that I saw or imagined or approached people and DEI. But these children, this gen, I'm like, wow, I am excited to see how they take everything that they're experiencing and utilize it to be leaders.
Definitely. I think about, you know, my 10-year-old son and the conversations that we have, and I'm blown away. I'm like, wait, what? Wait, you know that's happening? Like, you know,
I'm like, so we're talking about that. Okay.
Exactly. Let's go. And I'm just like blown away. And, you know, my 2 and 3 year old, they hear me talk about work and DEI all the time. Mm-hmm. So they're saying DEI. They probably know DEI more than their ABCs right now.
Yeah.
But even for them, you know, my 3 year old son said the other day, he was like, Mommy, well, you know, one of the kids in my school wasn't being fair. Mm. And I was like, well, do you know what that means? And so he started to break it down. So young people are, they're really conscious. They understand, they're aware, yeah, and they want to drive impact, real impact, not performative.
Yeah.
And I think that's really beautiful and exciting to see.
It is. Yeah. It is. So none of the work that you're doing will be in vain. We will all reap a beautiful harvest in our future, our leaders. And then we'll get to vote for these amazing leaders that will be influencing a new world of legislation in this country, which
that's right.
I'm excited about.
You and I both.
I'm excited about that. Netta, I've had so much fun speaking with you. I know I can't hold you because you've got a trillion things going on, and I want to give you space to do those things. But where can our listeners keep in touch with you or learn more about the work that you're doing?
Yeah, head to aerodei.com. So that's A-E-R-O-D-E-I. You can also head to nettajenkins.com or holisticinclusion.com. So those are the three ways you can connect with me.
Perfect. And I know you're on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So, okay. Under Netta Jenkins, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. It has been my pleasure to speak with you today. Great girlfriends. I know that you've enjoyed this conversation with Netta. Can't wait to hear your, read your emails and get your reviews in about this conversation and more around DEI. And we'd love to know also some of the ways that you're implementing change in your workplace or in your businesses or in your community as DEI advocates and allies. So thank you so much for being here with me, Netta. I appreciate your time, and I'm sending blessings to you and your beautiful family.
Thank you so much. The same for you.
Thank you.
All right, great girlfriends. Did you enjoy this week's episode of the podcast? If so, would you please give us your amazing review on iTunes? Every single review helps another great girlfriend get plugged into the podcast and the community. Speaking of community, make sure you join our Facebook group at The Great Girlfriends, follow us on Instagram at The Great Girlfriends, and on Twitter at @the_greatGFS. I'm Sybil Amuti, and I'm out. Peace.
Yay Networks.